Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Baseball Beat. It's the first week of March. Spring training is in full swing, and I'm back here again. This is Mike Carter with my good friend Chris Torres. Torres, how you doing tonight?
I'm great, man. Just drafting away in a couple DCs right now as we speak. I got to say, I'm feeling really good because, you know, sex is great and all, but what's even better?
I don't even know anymore. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, that's a different issue. We'll talk about that later. But one of the best feelings, as I'm sure you know, is when you're debating between two players.
I'm medium.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it.
Sorry.
In my case, it was three. And it was Yamamoto, Skubal, and Glasnow in my latest DC.
Ooh.
I was in the third round. I was sitting there, couldn't decide. Ended up going with Yamamoto. And I'm thinking, I had like 10 picks before I went in the fourth round. I'm like, there's no way I'm getting either of these guys to come back to me. Got Glasnow to come back to me in the fourth round at pick 52, which was just like, bro, I mean, is that not the best feeling or what? So
it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. And I just finished up a reliever draft, a reliever only draft. And so I didn't take any White Sox. Just a reliever only, 10 relievers. That's it. So I feel pretty good about it because I don't have any White Sox on there. So that's probably okay. So
that is a good thing. Yes.
Yes. I would say I was almost took your guy, Ron Marinaccio, but I decided against it. So I think that was a good decision. So. Yeah. Anyway, I will banter with you about this later, but we have a very special guest with us tonight, Chris, and it's a guy who really needs very minimal introduction to the 12 people who listen to us every week, and that's Eno Saris. Eno writes for The Athletic, MLB, Fangraphs, co-hosts the award-winning and outstanding Rates and Barrels with Derek Van Riper. If you're not listening to that, you should change that immediately. I think probably many of you are. He also is credited with creating Stuff Plus, is in the FSWA Hall of Fame, and is also a very famous underwear model who was in a commercial with some old washed up, never has been catcher. Somebody you probably never heard of. Eno, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us from Arizona. We know you got a million things going on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm at a Dodgers Giants game. I'm around the corner from the game out here in Scottsdale. I was earlier at the Rangers game, watched Evan Carter didn't have a great game. And White Lambert walked twice, but I'm watching baseball, you know, and I'm talking to baseball players, talked to Brady Singer about his changes to his pitch mix this morning. And it's okay. It's okay. It's really hectic. I'm trying to talk to as many players as I can in like 5 days. My family arrives Friday, you know, it's a whole thing, but it's really fun.
It's awesome.
The dream, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Today I'll relax and watch two innings before doing something else.
Yeah, before you have to run back to the Airbnb and climb up 11 flights of stairs with no working elevator and smells of meat wafting through the hallway. It's fantastic.
Well, you know, it was worse last year. Last year, so this year I have no working elevator, it smells like meat, and the internet didn't work for a while. And everyone's like, well, that's your problem because you did Airbnb. And I'm like, well, listen, I did hotels last year in Florida. And my door had one hinge. The floor was sticky. The air conditioner was stuck on 61, and I had no blankets. And they threw away my toothpaste. Like, I mean, you know, like it's you know, you're screwed either way.
Maybe in your next life, you need to write a travel guide for people who are running around through spring training, huh? You know, don't stay here. Sticky floors, and they throw away your personal belongings. Okay.
Yeah. So,
you know, one thing I've not heard a lot of people ask you about is how did you get your start really in the industry? You know, I've known you for a couple of years now, met you at First Pitch. You're a very gracious guy with your time. How did you get started?
I immigrated to this country. I came from Germany and Jamaica to this country in 86. And I just really, like, baseball is a way to be American. And so I got into baseball, but I immediately knew that I had a kind of analytical bone because you're like, you know, collecting cards like everybody else. But instead of trying to collect all the Braves guys, I was like, you know what? I'm going to trade you all these like Jeff Blausers and Mark Muncys for your Barry Bonds rookie because that guy's better. And like, I already knew that, like, that I wasn't going to be a person that was going to necessarily be a Braves fan my whole life. You know, I knew that, like, I loved the game and that I liked the analytical part of it. And part of that was my stepfather, my American stepfather, was betting on baseball, you know, and at some point, you know, they split and I would visit him in Vegas and, you know, he would be talking to me about his model, you know, and now years later I have a model. And you know, he that was a way that we talked about baseball. We talked about who was going to be good and who was not as good as people thought. And, you know, that goes straight into fantasy. I mean, that's the conversation we all have when we're sitting at a game. You know,
like, exactly.
This guy's not as good as people think, you know, or this guy's way better than people think. And so, you know, that naturally led itself to me playing fantasy in college. And when I left college, I had a boring job, like so many people their first year out of college. And I just spent all my time reading Fangraphs, reading Dave Cameron, reading USS Mariner, reading baseball, like reading Rob Nyer's column where he had a bunch of links to research, reading all the links that came out of his. That was page two. Reading all the links that came out of his column. And I became legendary at work for taking 2-hour poops. And I would just I would print out all of the stuff that I wanted to read and just take it to the bathroom with me. And when I left that job to write about fantasy for a full time, my boss said, yeah, I know. I saw this stuff in the bathroom. So I started writing on the side, and I wrote for a place called Fantasy Lounge Sports, which was at one word off of a club of ill repute. I don't know if we were headed for greatness as a company, but they allowed me to write about baseball and basketball mostly. I still play fantasy basketball, and I won an FSWA award for writing about Kevin Moss and age at level. And I wrote that Matt LaPorta wasn't going to be any good because he had been old at all the levels, where he'd had the good numbers. And that won an FSWA award. That got me my foot in the door with Fangraphs, with Sports Blog Nation, with a couple other places, Bloomberg Sports. And, you know, I also had a lot of luck along the way. I mean, there was a time when my wife graduated from business school, and it was like 2008. And, like, everything had gone to crap. And, you know, we didn't know what to do. And so our family was like, hey, you know, stay in this house, you know, watch this house. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to be a fantasy baseball writer. And so I took that opportunity to kind of transition. There were also some times when it got really hairy. My wife looked at me a couple times and said, your income is like $5 more than the daycare. So, like, I don't know how long you can keep doing this, but, you know, if it ever equals signs, you know, you're going to be in trouble. And I just managed to paddle faster than that number. And I also got super lucky and a lot of people helped me along the way. Aaron Gleeman, David Appleman, a lot of people helped me along the way.
Awesome. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So if we have you on, we've got to talk about Stuff Plus, right? So I'm going to go fast forward a little bit. We're going to ask you more about the kind of nexus of it, but I want to ask you more specifically about the most recent iteration of Stuff Plus. I know there were some changes that were made to the model this past off season, and I was just curious what those were and which players got the biggest bump from those changes to the model.
One of the biggest ones was platoon splits. I don't know why we did this, but early on, we decided that Stuff would not care what hand it came from and what hand was at the plate. And we just wanted to know what were good shapes and what were good velocities. That's what Stuff Plus is like the physical shape of the pitches and stuff. But we put it into Pitching Plus, which is actually, it's not just Stuff Plus, it's Location Plus. Pitching Plus is a third model that sort of re-looks at everything. So Pitching Plus always had platoon splits in it, and so if you were careful, you could actually kind of see some of the stuff coming. But we decided it had to go into Stuff Plus because there are things like if you throw a big sweeper It's this huge sideways breaking ball. If you throw that from a righty to a lefty, then the lefty sees it forever. I don't know. I don't know exactly why, but the lefty will hit it. And if you give them all that time, you know, they're going to see that pitch coming for a long time. They're going to take it. They're going to hit it. And so it has big platoon splits. It has the biggest platoon splits in baseball. If you don't put in platoon splits into Stuff Plus, you get something like, I need to teach everybody in my organization Stuff Plus, which some people like the Mariners did that. Everybody in the Mariners learned the sweeper because of Stuff Plus. Mm-hmm. And if you look now, there's only one Mariner starter that throws the sweeper. They all got to the big leagues and were like, you know, Logan Gilbert was like, I can't command this. Bryce Miller was like, this, everyone can see this out of my hand. You know, like all these people kind of cycled through it. George Kirby was like, doesn't fit my arsenal. So what we realized was kind of overvaluing sweepers. It was overvaluing, it was undervaluing changeups. Because changeups are the big platoon killer. And so when we put it back in, some of the biggest risers were people like, I think the biggest riser was Christopher Sanchez, who throws an amazing changeup, and it's just a beautiful changeup, and it's just kills platoon splits. And so there was no reason to devalue that, you know. And I was very happy to see that. Now Christopher Sanchez's changeup is rated as one of the best in the game, and so I felt better about that. So some of the risers you see are some lefties, definitely some lefties rose, and then a lot of changeup artists like Christopher Sanchez, and I feel good about that.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay, the other thing, one other thing we did though was also, you know, when Carlos Estevez left Colorado, we were like, you know, this guy always had good stuff, but Colorado actually changes the movement of your pitches. Mm-hmm. And so we just thought it'd be better to, and then we looked at like what altitude and what atmospheric conditions do to the movement of your pitches. And once we realized that the atmosphere and the temperature and the humidity changes the movement of your pitches, we decided that we would put those in. So basically, the newest Stuff Plus is saying, like, what would your stuff play at like sea level in like normal conditions? You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of, we've made it so that everyone's on the same footing. Because it wouldn't be fair. You can't just say that all the people in Colorado have bad stuff. They're just in trouble because they're in Colorado. Right. So we wanted to be able to maybe identify guys and be better if they left Colorado. Or, you know, there's other places that are actually, you know, Atlanta is a little bit like has more altitude than people think. So we wanted to adjust for that. So that's the other thing that's in there.
I know I see a lot of induced vertical break, a lot of discussion around that this spring training. Is that something that I need to pay attention to, or is that something that Stuff Plus is already capturing?
That's definitely a big part of Stuff Plus. And what's interesting about that is that imputed vertical break, like by itself, it doesn't tell you the whole story, because somebody like Spencer Strider, he gets an okay amount of vertical break, but he does it from a lower release point. And that has a lot of deception, and that has a lot of meaning for the hitter. They have a harder time seeing that. And so then you have people who have a more over-the-top one that have the same amount of vertical break as Spencer Strider and doesn't play as well. So, you know, yes, vertical break is a huge part of Stuff Plus, but also release point is. And it's really hard to I wish that Stuff Plus was less black box. I wish that it had, like, very easy things. I could be like, hey, everyone, this is X plus Y plus Z. Go do your own work. The problem is that every pitch has a different interaction. Sometimes the extension matters a lot. Sometimes the release point matters a lot. Sometimes the velo matters a lot. And since there are all these different features interacting with each other, machine learning is the only way to kind of make that work. But if you do want to watch a game and play along and look for stuff, you know, I think changes in vertical break in IVB are a good way to kind of track that. You'll see that, you know, Cole Reagans is getting more vertical break. And you know, I just talked to Brady Singer. He was saying he was getting pretty good vertical break on his new four seamer. So it is an important thing. It's one of the most important things, but Stuff Plus sort of takes that and wraps it into all the important things.
So we're here with Eno Saris. If you haven't already figured that out by listening to him talk about all of these wonderful things that he's got going on, you know, one question we want to ask, you know, as you go around spring training and visit with a lot of players and see a lot of different games, are there any spring training pitching performances so far that have caught your eye, and anybody that you're moving up or down in your rankings based on what you've seen to the naked eye this year?
Now, here's one that, you know, listeners get that I haven't necessarily managed to move up my rankings yet, but I will. Bowden Francis, I think he's going to make that Blue Jays rotation. Mm-hmm. He's added a splitter. I always pay attention. That's an easy one. Add a pitch. And not just add a pitch that you're talking about, like add a pitch that you threw 10 times in a game, you know, threw 15 times in a game. Add a pitch that you trust. He has had a new splitter that has great movement, and he's trusting it in games. He's added velo. That's an easy one, too. You can see that. That's super easy. Added velo. It's actually a little bit hard, though, in spring training because they're going two or three innings. So you have to kind of, like, wait to see what happens when they go four. Do they just lose all that extra velo they had? You know, so it's a little bit more nuanced, but still, added velo is good. And then opportunity is the oldest thing in fantasy baseball. And it's still maybe the most important thing. You can have as much quality as you want. You can be as good of a player as you want. If you're blocked at the major league level, you're not going to help me this year. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, you know, I see Alek Manoah struggling, hurting. I see Kevin Gausman's shoulder hurting. I see multiple ways that Bowden Francis makes that rotation. You know, I think it's interesting that Cole Reagans is even better. Tarik Skubal is even better. You know, their velo is up, their ride is up. Sonny Gray is even better. Like, you know, I think people are underwriting him because his ride is up, his velo is up. One more that's like kind of, you know, maybe not a 10-teamer, but like useful in a lot of leagues. Jack Flaherty has changed the shape on his fastball and has more velo. And it's a new voice. It's a new organization. He had a whole offseason to work on this. You might have heard some stuff in the Orioles organization that he couldn't necessarily work on while he was there. So I'm interested. All of the Tigers actually have had substantial changes to their arsenals, their numbers. I'm interested in all of them, actually. Like, Manning is good. Mize has changed stuff since his surgery. So I think the Tigers are a great place to shop right now.
Yeah, they really seem to know what they're doing with their pitchers. I mean, I even saw Tarik Skubal, his stuff plus is around like a 118 this spring. I don't know if that's 100%, but then there's Casey Mize, who's right in that same range. So, yeah, they are. It's really interesting what they're doing there. You mentioned pitchers adding a pitch, and you mentioned the splitter specifically. What about a guy like Bryce Miller? Are you in on him because of the added pitch?
I think if there was a more natural pairing between pitcher and new pitch and Bryce Miller and splitter, I don't know what it is, because he's very sort of over the top, has great ride. He's got a cutter, you know, kind of a hard slider, I would call it, more than a cutter. Some places call it a cutter. And you just need something a little bit more, another wrinkle, another swing and miss pitch. He was trying to throw a sweeper, but nobody swung at it because it had such a different release point than everything else. The splitter can come out of the same release point as its fastball. That's the whole point of the splitter, is it comes out looking the same. And it's going to have different movement than his hard slider. And I think it's kind of an amazing success story to think about. And like, the Mariners, you know, took a lot of players that had good command, and they weren't the same. Logan Gilbert is not the same as George Kirby, is not the same as Bryce Miller. The only way that they're kind of similar is that they have pretty good command, and they got coached up. And over time, they added the right pitches. They added velo. Bryce Miller was a reliever in college. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of this is like a pretty interesting, and I think speaks well of Mariners player development. Mm-hmm.
All right, Eno, I got a beef. I love you, man. I've been listening to you since you were a sleeper in the bus. Like, I was one of the crazies that would be in, like, I think it was Thursdays, right? You used to have your chat on Fangraphs. I was there, man. Like, that's I'm like a.
Those were silly chats. Those chats are better than my current chats. Those were silly chats.
Oh, those chats were amazing. That's that was like a point.
Yelling random crap, dude.
Yeah.
Those were great. They were great.
So I love you, but I do have a beef. All right, and Mike busts my chops because he thinks I'm obsessed with this player, which is...
Here we go.
Nick Pavetta is someone who, when I first looked at your rankings, I expected him to be pretty high up there because he's always rated well in Stuff Plus. Second half was freaking awesome last year. I've had him as a sleeper
like you for a while. I've agreed with you for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, so now, why is he now at SP 52 for you?
Because he's not any good, Chris.
No, that's not it.
No, I'm kidding.
I agree with you that he's a good pitcher, actually. I think he's a really good pitcher. I think that Boston is one of the hardest places in baseball to pitch. There's this weird thing. Like, Cutter Crawford, I think, is a good young pitcher. Do you know what his ERA was at home last year? 6.5. He had, like, a 3.2 on the road.
Wow.
I just think, you know, I did this piece where I asked a bunch of people, like, you know, what are the worst mounds in baseball? And a lot of them said Boston. And I thought I was going to do this piece like, oh, these places are taller and shorter. And that's where it started. Chris Bassett was like, Tampa's taller. I'm putting money on it. But what actually happened was I went through the pieces. It's all psychological. You know, it has to do with how you feel when you're on the mound. And apparently everyone that I talk to feels bad when they're on the mound in Boston. And they say that the backstop is super close.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel like the fans are on top of you in the front. And then you got the green monster over your right shoulder. It feels like the fans are just on top of you in the back. And there's this like wall that's like 200 feet away. And like, what the hell is that doing there? And there's not much foul ground. You know, it's like one of these old stadiums. And I think there's just a real psychological component to pitching there. Maybe Pavetta's figured it out, but I just have to realize, you know, I had to put park factors. One of the things I really like working, I work with Jordan Rosenblum now. We're taking Stuff Plus, we're putting it into projections. And what's so nice about that is one of my biggest misses of all time with Stuff Plus is Graham Ashcraft. What are the problems with Graham Ashcraft?
Park.
Platoon splits.
Oh, mm-hmm. Park. And that, yeah.
Both. Well, you're right. Park. Cincinnati's a tall-ass place to play. And then the two things he throws are a cutter and a sweeper. A cutter is better against lefties, and a sweeper is better against righties. But that means he's a one-pitch pitcher against both guys. Mm-hmm.
He should be closing.
He's a totally a closer. He really mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. And my friend Jeff at Baseball America said if you chase Stuff Plus too much, you get a bunch of relievers. So that's where you have to be careful. That's where the art of incorporating Stuff Plus in your analysis comes into. You want Stuff Plus, but you want a guy who commands it, and you want a guy who has multiple pitches. But if you're looking for a sleeper, you got to make some choices. Like, if a guy commands it and has multiple pitches and has Stuff Plus, like, he's an ace. Like, mm-hmm. he's you're not going to be like, ooh, nobody's heard of this guy. So you have to make your choices. And I respect you 100% for saying Pavetta has the stuff to do it, because that's true. I'm just looking at my projections, looking at the park, looking at some of his history, you know, looking at just saying, like, I'm just trying to rein myself in. But I agree with you. I've always... You know, I had a conversation with a team employee for the Phillies, an analyst who said, we don't know why Mick Pavetta's not better. And then they traded him away.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it seemed like he figured something out. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. The park is definitely something we need to consider. Real quick, I'll give you a, would you rather, you know, that little thing. I love that. because they go around the same area in drafts. And I mentioned before Bryce Miller. So who would you rather have, Nick Pavetta or Bryce Miller?
They're both have really good Stuff Plus. They both have really good fastballs, actually similar-ish fastballs. But Bryce Miller's landing points are so much softer. Seattle's cold. Seattle's right. So cold. Those balls don't go as far. You know, like
he gets more games against Oakland.
People were posting like, you know, for the Mariners fans, we're posting like, oh, you know, we've got like five starters in the top 50. And I'm like, well, yes, they're good. But they also, it's like if the A's ever had a good stat, they'd all be in the top 52. like this is a fantasy ranking. you know, if it was a true talent ranking, I would take away the park factors and I would look at like a sort of a true talent ERA. And that's actually in our projections. If you are a Google Doc user, we have a Google Doc with some good bits in it. There is actually a part of the projections that says context neutral ERA. And if you just want to know who's the best pitchers, you know, not with park factors, you can sort by that. So I'm just going to take Bryce Miller because he pitches in Seattle.
Good call. You know, everyone who is listening knows that you're kind of a legend in the industry, right? You've been at it a long time and really kind of founded a lot of the things that go on in fantasy baseball and baseball circles. Now, what advice would you give to somebody who was young and starting out right now? I know you talked a little bit about your struggles kind of getting into it a few years back. What advice would you give to somebody who's just getting started trying to do this work now?
Yeah. It's like you heard my story. There's so much luck involved. And I think one of the things that there's people out there that say, like, never work for free, right? And I get that because it's like a pro labor argument, right? It's like,
right,
don't work for free so they don't ask the next guy to work for free. I get that. And I want to tell you not to work for free. However, fantasy is just this different industry, man. And I worked for free and it worked for me. Now, I was lucky. I had some help, you know, and so not everyone has that. So I get stuck when I'm trying to make recommendations to people because I don't know what your life is like and I don't know what you can do. But I do know that most of us come to this as a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us come to this as a thing we do on the side. And I think the best advice I can give is say yes to everything as long as you can.
Yes.
That's what I did. I said yes to everything. I still say yes to podcasts. I still say yes as often as I can. If you called me and said, I want you to be on my podcast weekly, I'd be like, okay, so now we got to talk money. Now I got to say no. You know what I mean?
So we're going to ask you actually afterward. Mike's going to pay you personally.
But yeah, say yes as long as you can, and as your dance card starts to get more crowded, then you say no, and you say, well, you can get ahead of the other people on my dance card if you pay better. I mean, it's that's a more nuanced way of doing it, and I just think that just saying like never work for free, I don't know, it's not that kind of industry. Like, there's going to be some opportunities where someone says, you know, hey, let me put you on this big site. And people, and I know, I hate this. You'll get exposure. I hate that. But I don't know. It works sometimes.
It's also true. Yeah.
I got paid $10 a post when I started at Fangraphs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm not trying to out David Atwood. I was happy to get $10 a post. But like what's the difference between getting $10 a post and not getting paid? Like, honestly, it's like. He could have not paid me, and I would have said yes because I would have been on Fangraphs. So, you know, I would just say just say yes as long as you can. Help people, read other people. You know, one of my big things that I do, I still do this to this day, is read other people's research and then write a piece that's like, here's other people's research, here's linking to them, here's giving them credit. It's the Rob Nyer model, you know, like here's credit to other people. I'm reading you. I'm learning. And then I'm going to just add a little bit of analysis to it. I have a piece coming out next week about, you know, guys in contract years. It has links to other people's research, links to my own research. And then a little bit of analysis that's relevant to fantasy. That's like a tried and true model. Like, you know, if you give credit to other people for the research they're doing, then you can add analysis on top of it. So, and then all of a sudden you make up your own research and somebody was like, well, you know what? He read my research and he linked to my research and then he gave me credit. So I'm going to say, well, look at this thing, you know? So there's, when the fantasy community is at its best, we're giving each other credit. Mm-hmm. We're giving each other retweets. We're giving each other love because we know that a lot of us aren't making any money doing this. And we're listening to each other because we're all just trying to learn about the sport that we love. So say yes, listen, learn, and try to help other people. That's the best advice I can give.
Love it. Well said. It's great advice.
Yep. All right. So we got to ask you about beer, right? We know that's your other passion.
Having one.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
I am too.
What are your top three all-time beers?
Oh, top three all-time. I'm going to put Pliny the Elder in there. People want to say, it's played out or whatever. It's been there forever. It's one of those goat type beers. Pliny the Elder.
Old school. Yeah, always good.
Old school. And it reminds you of what beer used to be, but not in a bad way. You know, like I drink Fat Tire and I'm like, oh, that's what beer used to be. And I don't want it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I have Pliny and I'm like, oh man, they've been making this, for like 25 years and I still love it. So Pliny the Elder's on there. I think one of the newest sort of greatest of all time types of beers is Julius from Treehouse in Boston. That's like basically the first hazy, like the best, the first sort of like, I don't know, the one that really captured our imagination. And then this might be a surprising one, but it represents a style of beer that I really like. I'm the king of waffles, so I'm gonna try and fit two in here into the last three, into the last spot. But there's a beer called Firestone Walker Easy Jack. I don't know if it's even out there anymore, but it used to be this like sort of 5% pale ale. It was just like had taste, but also low in calories. You could have it while you're mowing the lawn kind of beer. And then Cellar Maker makes 5% hazies. And so I love my current favorite beer as a runner. I run 20 miles a week. I'm 44 years old. The calories just go right to the belly. I want 5% hazies, 5% easy pails, 5% pilsners. That's a place. So Cellar Maker Dovis, I'm going to give them a tie. Cellar Maker Dovis and Firestone Walker Easy Jack. They sort of represent this like 5% beer that I've been really digging on recently.
Those are all good choices. And when you make it to Chicago, I owe you several beers. Thanks for coming on with us. We know that you're about
to go to Beer Temple.
Game. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Sounds like a plan. If you want to plug anything that you got coming out here in the next couple of days, go ahead and do that. And then we'll let you get out of here. Thank you so much for making time for us tonight. We know that you're in the middle of a really hectic run of time and hope that you can enjoy some family time this weekend with your wife and the kids coming out. So if you want to tell everybody where they can find you and what you got going on, that'd be great.
I apologize. This isn't longer, but it's been a day. I don't know if you haven't seen the Rates and Barrels for a day, then you'll maybe understand a little better when you see it. It's been a tough day and I really appreciate this is a great amount of time to do it. Thank you. I wish I could have given you a little more time, but this is fun to see you guys. I don't know. I've got this piece coming out next week about, I've got a piece coming out tomorrow with Ken Rosenthal about if the sweeper is leading to injuries. I don't know when tomorrow will be when you publish this, but that's Friday. And next week I'm going to have a piece about contract week. And I've got a really cool piece coming out with Andrea, the scout girl, where she's going to do kind of like scout stuff. And I know I've got some minor league stuff plus numbers. So some of my favorite minor league prospects will play in the big league this year. So we're going to kind of give you the scout and stats perspective. But for anybody listening that is, skeptical about paying for the Athletic, I understand. I think the easiest way is just to listen to Rates and Barrels or listen to the podcast, Nick Pollock, The Craft. Either way, I'll reference pieces I write. You'll get to hear about them and then, hopefully someday one of those things I talk about will lead you to subscribe. But it's been really fun, and it's great to see you, Mike. Nice to meet you, Christopher. Sure. And please, have you not been out to First Pitch Arizona?
I haven't. Mike keeps bugging me about it. I'm going to try to make it out there. I need to make some money in my leagues, and then that'll fund my trip.
You're screwed. You're screwed. Then if we're waiting for you to win a league, you're screwed.
I don't think so, buddy.
I'll put you up, Chris.
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, you can get a bed from one of us for sure. I do understand from New York is a little further, but it's a really fun time because it's just a bunch of people from the industry come together. We get to watch the prospects. And for some reason, it's like the right time and the right sort of energy. I haven't, you know, the spring training ones haven't captured me the same way. It's like the Arizona one is perfect. You know, it's November. Everyone's like, you know, I don't know. It's just perfect. It's cheaper. It's actually cheaper than Florida.
It's a great way to put it.
I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Chris, if you went, Chris, I swear you would never miss it again. You would love it. It's so great. Honestly, the first time I went, I knew nobody. I knew like two people when I went. And this is the fourth time that I went, and I felt like I got to know everybody. It's fantastic. You would love it.
But either way, it's been really fantastic getting to know you here. And I can't believe you're an old chat head. All I got to say is Matt Damon.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And lewd time, right?
It is lewd time for sure. All right, Mike.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this episode up now. Eno Saris was with us tonight. Eno, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate you and all of your advice and the love that you give to everybody in the community. For Chris Torres, I'm Mike Carter signing off on the Fantasy Baseball Beat. We'll be back with you next week with another special guest. Thank you so much for listening. Peace, and take care of yourself out there, please.